You're listening to Trek FM.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Welcome, everyone, to Trek FM's local watering hole. We are back here for the 69th episode, almost to 70. I cannot believe we have come so far so fast. It's been a great ride, and we are just going to continue that ride. It's going to get fast and loose. We, might be back in black. Who knows what's going to happen? Hey, Ruby, can you please turn down the AC/DC? Okay, thank you. Sorry. She's been really excited because we're going to be talking about Iron Man 2. And so it's been AC/DC all day. And, I mean, I love AC/DC, but there's just kind of only so much of them I can take at one time. But I'm excited to have the Marvel Posse back. Before I get them introduced, just want to remind everybody here that if you don't know, we are part of the Trek FM network, and you can find all of the shows, including the 602 Club, on iTunes at itunes.com/TrekFM. You can also find us on Twitter at Trek FM. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. If you would like to send us an email contact form just about what you think about the show, maybe something you would like to hear us talk about, go to trek.fm/contact. You can even leave us a voicemail. Look in the sidebar on the show page or go to speakpipe.com/TrekFM. You can find all of that at the website at trek.fm. And then, of course, we have the listeners-only discussion group, the Babel Conference. It's a great place to have the best discussions about everything online. You just want to type Babel in the search field on Facebook or click discussion on any of the menu bars on any of the show pages at trek.fm. And so, like I said, Marvel Posse is back. Andy, welcome back to the 602 Club.
Thanks. I'm excited to school Daniel on Iron Man.
Oh, goodness. Well, I knew that I had to have you two on because, you know, obviously Daniel is the Iron Man fanboy. And I try to stay out of it, but me and Andy, we're the Cap people. We're Team Cap. He's Team Iron Man as we go into the Civil War era. Daniel, represent Iron Man. So glad to have you back.
It's okay. I mean, I know you guys, you have the numbers, but I'm right. So really, I kind of have the advantage here, even though it might not seem it at first glance.
Keep telling yourself that.
Goodness. All right. Well, it has already begun. I feel like we are in political season here on the 602 Club, talking about who's right and all that, as if that has anything to do with movie reviews. It's all what we think, what we want to talk about, and goodness. This movie is an interesting one for the MCU in general because when it came out, you know, The Incredible Hulk, it had been lackluster for them. We talked about that with Mike here on the 602 Club, and we actually really enjoyed the film, and we recommended that everybody see it. It's actually a much better film than I remember. Unfortunately, the public at the time didn't think that, and Marvel was really hoping for another hit, so it gets Jon Favreau back, it gets Robert Downey Jr. back, and they're going to launch fully into the MCU because they've figured out what their plan is going to be working towards the Avengers, and that really makes Iron Man 2 kind of this transitional film with a lot of moving pieces. So for you guys going into this one and seeing it, you know, for the first time, and even rewatching it now, how does it feel to you? What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely transitional. I don't feel like it covers a whole lot of new ground, but there's a ton of stuff that happens in it. They bring in Black Widow for the first time. They really start to set up the Avengers. So there's a lot of storylines going on here, and a lot of the connection that we're going to get into the other MCU movies start happening in this one. So, yeah, I mean, we start getting hints of Thor, we start getting hints of Cap, we start getting hints of the entire Avengers crew, and we get Black Widow. So, I mean, Iron Man 2, considering how maybe that's not my favorite movie of the MCU, really does set up a lot of what is to come.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, and we'll definitely get into this, and I'm going to state this statement over and over again. But what I think is important to remember is that the way that Marvel handles their movies, it's a super thin line, like between doing it right and between doing it wrong, between doing it just enough or too much. So, and I'm sure we'll compare this movie to Age of Ultron, or maybe even go on the other side of it and compare it to something like Guardians of the Galaxy or Ant-Man, where we can show examples of a movie that is involved in a universe, but does it, but just does it just enough where you can recognize that it's part of the universe, or too much where it's bogged down by what it's a part of. And to me, this is an example of Marvel trying to discover that line, because they hadn't really gotten that point yet, and they hadn't perfected exactly where they wanted to be. And so I recognize that there are issues with this film, but I give them quite a pass on it, because this is still unprecedented territory at this point.
It is a movie, like you said, Daniel, it is trying to figure out how do we incorporate the universe but not have it overshadow the film that we're making. And I think you make an apt comparison that this is kind of maybe the first misstep with that, that it doesn't quite all gel the way it should. And that is very evident in Age of Ultron, where that movie, they have shoved way too much into it. And I think you were saying this early, and just not a lot feels like it happens in the movie, yet there's a lot going on, but it doesn't necessarily feel like super consequential. And Iron Man 2 does kind of have that problem, especially because they shoved Scarlett Johansson in this movie, and her character is absolutely meaningless to it. Like, she doesn't do anything, there's no reason for her to be here, and she's taking away screen time from, well, a character you should be more focused on, like Pepper Potts, in that relationship with Tony, and just let her have all the stuff that she's doing, except for, you know, the ass-kicking scene, which, again, just watching the movie last night, that whole scene has no, like, it doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the film, and you could have changed what she does in that scene where she reboots Rhodey's suit to somebody else. You could have rewritten it to be somebody else where it wouldn't have had to been her, and you wouldn't have had at least 5 minutes on screen taken away from everything else that's going on, plus all the other times that she's filmed. I love Scarlett Johansson, and you can put her in anything and I'll watch it, but speaking just as a movie person, it was one of the things here as we're talking about this. It just, you're cramming too much in, and you're making Jon Favreau have to work really hard to put things into the movie that don't service the storyline of Tony Stark. And, you know, when you're doing the Marvel's heroes films, the movies suffer when they're not truly about the character. Like, I would say, the hallmark, obviously, Iron Man, but then, like, the way that Cap 2 is all about Captain America, and everybody else supports him, they hadn't found, like, they just hadn't found that line yet, and it doesn't work as well here.
It's so funny that you bring up Captain America 2 to compare to this, because, again, I'm just surprised, first of all, because the Black Widow stuff didn't bother me at all. In fact, I liked it quite a bit. That was one of the better ones.
I'm not saying I don't like it.
No, no, no.
I'm saying irrelevant to the... It's not helpful to the film to have her in there, other than the fact that you just have to shove her in because you want her introduced before you get to Avengers.
And that's true of all the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, to be honest. As much as I love Clark Gregg and as much as I love Nick Fury, they brought them in to solve problems that could have been solved by existing characters. And I mean, why does Nick Fury bring closure for Tony Stark for his relationship with his father? I mean, that's shoehorned in as well. I mean, I don't feel like, I feel like the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff is in there for MCU purposes, not for this movie storyline purposes. Now, that being said, I sure like watching Scarlett Johansson kick ass. And I sure like Clark Gregg, you know, smacking down Tony and giving him little sassy one-liners. So it's enjoyable, but it kind of goes to the heart of the problem of this movie, which is too many storylines and not a cohesive narrative that goes throughout the whole thing.
There's just too many heroes in the kitchen, is what we're saying.
But to me, I wouldn't have even dropped the Scarlett Johansson, the Black Widow, Nick Fury stuff, especially not the Agent Coulson stuff. If for no other reason than their lovely exchanges that they have, and what happens, of course, in the Avengers with Clark Gregg. I mean, it's so important to that film.
Well, but he's also, I mean, he's in a lot more in Thor. I mean, he plays a much bigger role than Thor, so you don't have to have him in this film.
Right, but I think that his death impacts Tony in such a way that he starts to, at least in that one pivotal scene, Thor's gone off the helicopter. This is way too into Avengers, I think, where I'm trying to get. What I'm trying to say is that those aren't the scenes that I was like, this is too much, I guess is my point.
I would agree with that, actually. I'm just saying that this is the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents are enjoyable, but when you're putting them up against so many other competing storylines, they have to pick one or the other. So if they had chosen S.H.I.E.L.D., I think that could have worked quite nicely. But it's just that they're competing against a couple of other storylines that I think are superfluous. Yeah, so I think we're actually on the same page there, Daniel. I don't want to lose my Black Widow stuff, and I definitely don't want to lose my Coulson stuff.
Especially because the way she's introduced is super cool, super effective, and like sets up her character in a way that we wouldn't get otherwise. I like the fact that we get to see her be spy Natalie, and like it's cool, and like she knows Latin. Nobody speaks Latin; it's a dead language. And then she's just like out there doing her thing and like impressing. I think it is a cool way. It's not necessarily super important to the plot of the film, but if we were going to lose elements of the film, I would definitely pick two or three other things before that.
Well, and my point, though, is that, I mean, just take Iron Man 1. You know, obviously it's an origin story, but it's also tightly focused, and there isn't a lot of extraneous material. And any time that you start to make a film and you start plugging things in that are kind of fun, but they're not necessary to the plot of the movie, to connect with other things, you start to lose the cohesion. And I think we all are agreeing that there's a lack of cohesion in Iron Man 2 that wasn't, you know, that didn't happen in Iron Man. It definitely isn't even in Incredible Hulk, and that we don't really see that kind of lack of cohesion again until Age of Ultron, where, again, they're trying to put too much MCU stuff in and not just focus on the story at hand with the heroes. So I think that in the end, the question of does it's all connected kind of hurt this film, I think it does, because it can't just tell the Tony Stark Iron Man story it needs to tell, which, you know, it revolves around Tony, his father, his relationship with Don Cheadle, and his relationship with Pepper. Those are the four main relationships in this. His tangential relationship with S.H.I.E.L.D. is something that you can cover in, you know, the end credit scene. Anytime you're not focusing on, I think, one of those four relationships, you start to lose what we were talking about. So I love, again, Black Widow being in the film, because I love Scarlett Johansson. I think she's an incredible actress. I love the character of Black Widow. But I don't think personally that she really fits well enough into the film to take away from what probably could have just been better story elements. But if you guys don't want to take out Black Widow, what would you take out to kind of make this work better?
I would start with the Palladium subplot.
Yeah, the Tony is sick and his father invented a...
Doesn't that kind of like drive the whole Tony Stark
it
story?
It does in a way.
But you could easily replace it with whatever. Honestly, I agree with that. That's my first thing. My first thing is like Tony is sick and he's got to have his father from 30 years ago create a new element that just sits on a map and just sits like that was ridiculous. I honestly was not connecting with the Tony and his father storyline. I just say get rid of Howard Stark out of the entire film. Again, you would have to rework it in such a way. I would rather see the Black Widow, Nick Fury stuff than Tony and Howard Stark. And I know it's, thematically it's kind of important, especially considering what happens with, and we'll talk about Mickey Rourke later. But I don't know. I don't care. I mean, it's that one scene where he's like, oh, I'm proud of you, son. You're the best thing I've ever created. Like, it's not.
But I never bothered to tell you in the moment. Yeah. I just left you some film in care of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you happened to find it at exactly the right time. And oh, look, this old model just seems like 30 years later, still chilling in Pepper's office. It's got all the answers for you. Like, I agree with you, Daniel.
To suggest that Howard Stark was actually this model parent, or maybe not a model parent, but this great parent behind all of his busyness and busy. I don't know. It just, it takes away from the Tony character for me. Actually, it doesn't actually add anything. And I'm just like, no, I just, nope, don't care. I like the fact that Tony is a self-made hero. He doesn't need, it's fine that his father was brilliant as well, but it's, he doesn't need this. This isn't helping him. We can just drop it. Just drop it completely.
Well, I think that like you said, the thematic element of the legacy of fathers is the core of the film, because it pits the hero against the villain. And because you've got Ivan Vanko and his father, both involved in kind of hating the Starks for what they think they did to them, even though the Starks didn't do anything to them. They were just protecting their investment in this technology and trying to keep it out of the hands of anyone in the black market. So I think that's the core element of the film. If you take that out, you don't have a movie. I don't really know what you would be writing towards. And so I feel like if you had actually just taken the other stuff out and it strengthened that storyline, it would have been helpful. I agree with you guys that it comes off a little quick and not as important as it should be, but that's because they're having to cram all this other stuff in that's taking time away from the soul searching that Tony is supposed to be doing. And I will also say that, you know, growing up in a household where I watched my dad's father and my dad learn to not be super emotional towards, you know, each other and then to me, that makes sense that Howard Stark doesn't know how to talk to his son and share those feelings, especially in that time period. Many of those men who came back from World War II weren't known for being the most emotionally open people. Howard Stark might not have been all involved in the war, but he definitely saw enough of it and I think was just emotionally reserved enough to not be able to really pass that on to his son. And I completely disagree with you guys. I think you're both wrong, that because I feel like that's the core of the story. You focus more on that, you get rid of the other stuff, and you have more time to just make that a better storyline. And I think that's what's missing, is that being stronger. You're right. It's not as strong as it should be. So it feels like it's kind of superfluous, but it's actually the core.
I think the main problem is you're seeing there are so many themes in this movie that what you're seeing as the main theme, the theme of legacy, which is definitely there, is not the main theme that I see. So the main theme that I see is who controls power and how do you like the military industrial complex and who should be in charge of that. And like there's so many threads here. There's so many themes that makes all of them weaker across the board.
Right. No, and I agree with you too, because that's a huge theme. Those are I would agree with you, Andy. I think those are the two main themes of this film. But I think that, again, having to do things just to service the greater whole of the it's all connected is taking away from those two things. Because I think those two things are intricately connected. Those two storylines are intricately connected.
But I mean, I'm even wondering, though, I mean, in this scenario where you would remove Natasha from the and Nick from the movie, how would you even address that more? I mean, the you know, Howard is dead. There's not much more we can. I mean, in what way would you be able to push that to the forefront? Honestly, I would agree that yeah, it's actually, especially with how this movie is set to set up War Machine as well. I would actually think that the Tony versus oh my goodness, what's his name? Rhodey. The Tony versus Rhodey theme would be more interesting and kind of more compelling because both of those characters are alive and both of those characters are interacting with each other. And that maybe if you wanted to sacrifice that secondary storyline for that, that would, to me, I would get that. But I just, to me, it's the father-son stuff is just like, eh, no, I just, I just don't care. Just don't care.
Well, and I think, I don't know, then what do you care about in this movie? Because you just took out the emotional core of the film. Like, what do you even care about this movie then?
No. There's nothing to care about. Tony only cares about that for two scenes. Again, I agree.
No. I think because Tony is clearly worried about his own legacy.
Sure.
And what he's going to leave. And he doesn't know, he doesn't have any idea how to handle that. So he just self-destructs. That's all he knows how to do. But
well, he also self-destructs because he's dying. And we've
well,
agreed
yes,
that we
but
can
I'm
get
just
rid
saying,
of that.
But it's not just that he's dying, but it's this that what's going to be his legacy?
Yeah, I mean, okay, here's the problem. Too many themes, too many storylines, no agreement on what should be focused on. So, like, what we can agree on is that there's too much. What we can't agree on is what could be removed. It's like, Daniel and I are like, keep the shield stuff and then focus on this other theme, and Matt wants to keep the dad stuff. Like, so the problem remains. The problem remains that we don't even really have a clear villain because you've got several villains. They're setting up Vanko as his main, you know, antagonist, but the whole thing's watered down by also having him be against the U.S. government in Senator Stern, and then also, you know, corporate competition with Hammer. So like you've got all of this diffusion of not only your themes but your villains, and even, you know, your emotional relationships. You already pointed out that a lot of what the SHIELD agents did could have been done by existing relationships within the, you know, the movie. I agree with you completely that Pepper doesn't get enough to do. And it would have been nice to see Pepper be more involved with bringing Tony back from his breakdown than giving it all to SHIELD, because we want to see their emotional relationship strengthened. At this point, all they really do is fight, amusingly. So, I mean, I would really love to see that relationship deepened in a much more meaningful way, and we just don't have enough room for it because there's a million other things going on. It's frustrating.
Well, I think that the argument too that we're having is the same argument that kind of probably happened behind the scenes.
Yeah.
About what do we leave in? What do we take out? And then it was just like, oh, screw it. We don't have enough time to worry about it, so we'll just put this on screen. And that's why the movie does kind of feel like a muddled mess, because there is no focus. And, you know, if there's anything that I've learned about film after watching a lot of them, is you can tell when a movie doesn't have its focus, you know, and you tend to like those better. You know, Daniel, we talked about Deadpool last week, and regardless of whether I liked the film or not, it has a laser focus. I mean, laser focus. So, that's maybe a little bit easier to do sometimes when you're doing the origin story, but I think it's also really important when you're doing the second film in the series. You know, it's not just about being bigger and louder and all of that in the sequel. It's about really growing the character, and I feel like they couldn't figure out how to make all this work to really grow Tony. And for you guys, you know, Tony's growth here, doesn't it feel like a little bit of a repeat?
Yes.
Like we're just repeating the theme of
yes.
Tony being prideful and...
Yes. This is my main problem actually with Iron Man in general, is because I feel like he learns the same lesson in every single one of his stories. That's what I feel like. I feel like he that the growth he makes in Iron Man is immediately taken away and then redone in Iron Man 2 and then in Iron Man 3 and then in Age of Ultron. That's...
So you're saying he's just one big suit of hubris?
Yeah, I mean, it's over and over again, Tony making a weapon and then not being able to control the effects of the weapon and then making a bigger weapon and then not being able to control the effects, or like being arrogant and then being humbled, but then being arrogant again just to get humbled again. That's my main problem with Tony in general. And then if you look, and I'm really not trying to make this a Civil War thing, but if you look at the way that they do Captain America, you can see that the second movie is doing a totally different thing for the captain. He is facing totally different problems. Oh, Daniel, I can see you. You're like so ready. Okay, come at me. Come at me. Bring it.
First of all, I do want to say one thing. And this is just going back for just a comment or two. You mentioned that who is the main villain here? And you mentioned Senator Stern. By the way, Senator Stern, an agent of Hydra.
Which is really cool.
Which won't play out for like 300 years.
I love it,
which
though.
Marvel has
it,
a huge
it makes
problem
that,
with doing.
That whole Senate scene so much more interesting. So I love better. That because yeah. You're like, not only he wasn't trying to get tech for the US, he was trying to get tech for Hydra. It's brilliant. I love that.
But it doesn't help that you don't know that now. Like
it doesn't hurt. It actually only helps to me in my mind. Like I can watch that scene and be like, oh, he's just kind of a dick. And then I can watch that scene in Winter Soldier and be like, oh wait. Oh, I see what they did there. That's really
yes,
cool.
I like it because it works within the movie and it also works within the MCU. Like, if you never find out that he's Hydra, it still works. But if you do, then it just adds all these extra layers to him coming back. And yeah, no, I love it. I love it so much. But anyways, I'm glad you brought it up because I certainly wasn't going to let it. I didn't want to go the whole podcast without saying how cool it is that he's Hydra. He's Hydra? So cool.
but anyways, as far as this idea, first of all, I mean, in my mind, and of course, and all of the listeners know, and I don't have to tell you guys, I'm an Iron Man fanboy and
it's
apologist.
It's a dangerous place in your mind.
So, you know, I'm going to side with on that side probably 99% of the time. Tony Stark is a narcissist. I mean, he is a textbook narcissist. Yeah, he can learn his lesson, but this is a fundamental flaw of his personality. It's okay to revisit these themes in different ways. I think it's really unfair to compare Captain America's situation in Cap 1 and Cap 2 to Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2, because Captain is in a fundamentally different place in those films. I mean, he is 80 years removed from his timeline. He is... And he is not shown to be a super flawed person in the beginning to start with. It's not like we're like...
Well, no. I think that's... again, this is a completely different subject, but I'll just tackle it for real quick. That's one of the cool things that... And it's very interesting about those two characters. Cap is, from beginning to end, somebody who has a complete moral core. He's like the Obi-Wan Kenobi of the MCU. Like he has an unshakable moral core. Nobody else in the MCU has that. Everybody else around him has shades of gray. Cap is black and white in the very best of ways. You know, he is a classic libertarian. You know, he believes in freedom for all. That's what drives him. And when you try and take that away, I mean, that's what makes him such an interesting character in a world that's full of nothing but gray. And, you know, insane narcissists and weird scientists and all that. He's just a guy who believes in right, wrong, and God.
And I think that that is actually probably what Daniel is driving at, that he doesn't have enough flaws to make him interesting. And for me, on paper, Captain America to me is incredibly boring. But in execution... the way they have contrasted that those aspects of his character with, you know, his antagonists and the way that they've explored it has been super, super interesting. But I can see how one might prefer a character that doesn't have such a clear-cut motivation. Because it could, it's much, most of the time, if you have a hero without a, you know, a discernible flaw, they become very flat and very boring.
And let me totally clarify here. My absolute favorite superhero is Superman. So the same argument that people levy against Superman all the time, which I disagree with in that case, I disagree with, or I levy in a lot of ways towards Captain America. So I'm kind of a hypocrite in that way, but
at least he's admitting it, Andy. We got him.
But it's a different situation, and I guess my point is that Captain America in the first and the second films, he's defined by his circumstances. Where in Iron Man, Tony Stark is defined by who he is, his personality. And I guess that's kind of two sides of the same coin, It's more like Cap is learning to adjust to the world, where Iron Man himself has to adjust himself. I don't know. It's a slightly different thing. So to me, it's not. Yeah, I mean, if you look at, especially as I do now, and especially as we can in hindsight, if we look at Iron Man's his total arc from Iron Man 1 up until even now, Age of Ultron. I think they are telling a really cool, a really interesting story. And yeah, he's learning the same lesson over and over again. But I mean, how many times have we as people have to learn the same lesson? You know, we're not perfect. We don't get it.
Oh, no, I agree with you, Ed.
I think it's realistic. I just don't think it's that fun to watch.
what was interesting in this film was Tony asking a similar question, but not quite the same question. And again, as we talked about, the payoff isn't quite as strong as it needs to be because they didn't find a way to really bring that story to the forefront in a way that really captured you because of everything else that's going on. And, him having to make a new element and everything, it's just, it's so fast and quick, like, he literally says, "Oh, that was easy," and the audience goes, "Yeah, way too easy." I know you're Tony Stark and one of the smartest men alive, but that's ridiculously easy. I think even just the resolution to it all feels so quick and like snappy. The resolution to an emotional problem for a character and a physical problem like that shouldn't be the snap of your fingers, like the snap of his wit. And that's what it comes to in this film, and that's just why I think we all agree. It's just frustrating because we know that there's a better movie in there. It just feels like they never coalesced as to what that better movie was, and they threw this up on screen.
And you know what's frustrating, too, is when I was rewatching it, I realized that I actually like most of the moments of this movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, I like a lot of the scenes. It's just that they don't fit together in a narrative that is interesting to me. So, like, there are lines that I love. There are scenes that I love. The actors are awesome across the board. And it just never quite all fits together in a complete story. It's like they put together a bunch of little cool moments and just, like, put them next to each other. And that's really frustrating because you really can. You can see a great movie in there and it just doesn't quite ever get its feet, I guess. Going back to Daniel, where you're talking about how Cap is in a completely different, like, physical place, not just mental place. Like, they push him forward 80 years. That's going to be a rich topic for character development. That's kind of what I wish that they would do with Iron Man, not throw him into the future, but put him in a different place. One of the reasons why Iron Man 1 works is because they spend a lot of the time taking him out of his element, dropping him into a place where he has to rely on just himself, not everything else, and then like seeing what he does in that situation. I would love to see in both Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3, this doesn't happen, right? I would love to see.
Oh, no, Andy. I'm sorry about that. But Iron Man 3, that's all they do. They take Tony out of his element and his suits.
That's not what I
mean. And
what I mean is I would like to see. And that's actually the whole Iron Man 3 storyline where he actually goes off the grid is the best part of that movie. I would just like to see it more often because he relies so much on his wit and, you know, his money and, you know, his pepper, really.
His pepper.
Yeah. I mean, like, I would just... little salt, I think little it's pepper. More interesting, and all of the best Iron Man moments for me are most interesting when you take all that stuff away from him and like, strip him down. And they don't do that to him in this movie, really.
Yeah, I mean... I understand that. I do have to agree with Matthew that I think that's literally the entire point of Iron Man 3.
I agree with you. That section of that movie is my favorite part of that movie. But yes, I agree with that.
I do want to, because gosh, we could like keep mired in this talking about all the different the films and the way they're impacted, because it really is this film. It starts it's all connected, and it all starts to really create an interesting, albeit sometimes warped, tapestry that doesn't always quite fit together. But you mentioned something, Andy, that I thought was right on, is that everybody is, especially the new characters, too, they're all acting really well. Everybody's on fire in the movie. You know, nobody is, bringing their C game or anything like that. And
put Sam Rockwell in everything, please.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. So, Don Cheadle replaces Terrence Howard as Rhodey in this film. And so I guess this ensues the battle of which Rhodey's better.
Don Cheadle.
I mean, I don't... Yeah, I would say it's Don Cheadle as well. Yeah.
Wow, no fight. We're all going to agree because I'm with you too. I love Don Cheadle's performance. I think he really works well with Robert Downey Jr., and not only that, but I think that when he's giving the quippy lines back, I believe it more. You know, I feel like he is just more of that type of character who can be a foil in a good way. Like, he is like Tony without the narcissism. But, you know, he's dedicated. He's willing to put himself on the line when he needs to. He's just not a narcissist about it.
He's also an establishment guy.
Exactly. And but he also has a really quick wit as well. So you put them two together and it's kind of a little bit like oil and water, and they rub off on each other really well. I like the interplay between those two. I like them when they're in their suits together, and I also just like them, when they're on screen, talking to each other. And I think it's really well done.
And of course, it's a comic book movie. So if you're friends, you have to fight at some point, just because you have to.
Well, yeah. Even if you're not friends, I mean, and in every Marvel film, I feel like all the heroes fight at least once. You know, Avengers, they'll fight. Guardians of the Galaxy, they fight. Age of Ultron, they fight. I mean, anytime the team gets together, you fight each other. So yeah. Ah, goodness.
Terrence Howard is an excellent actor, but he has a tendency to be inconsistent. If you have Terrence Howard in the right role and he's being directed well, he is amazing. I feel like in Iron Man, he's a little bit flat. And then with Don Cheadle, the reason I prefer Don Cheadle as an actor is he's both consistent and he has like a steady quality to him that I think is really important for Rhodey, because Rhodey is supposed to balance Tony. So Don Cheadle for the win.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Andy. I completely agree with that one. We talked a lot about her character, you know, just whether or not she should have necessarily been in the film. But I'm a huge Black Widow fan, and what she does do in the film, she does so well. I mean, her scene in the hallway where she is just ripping through those guys one by one with little to no sweat is impressive. And I think throughout the rest of the film, anytime that she's there, Scarlett Johansson is just a winner of an actress to me. And she just sells me on this role, as she does with just about any role that she's in. So I think they made the perfect choice for Black Widow. And it's just a shame that they have never allowed her a bigger part. Probably one of my favorite parts of Cap 2 honestly.
Yeah, I mean, she's a great foil for both Tony and Cap, actually. She brings out interesting things in both of them. But I just have to say that one of my favorite things to come out of Iron Man 2 is that we get a chance to see Black Widow's fighting style for the first time. And it's very unique and very... I mean, you see her make some of those moves or variation on those moves for the rest of the MCU. And I love that consistency in her fighting style. And this is the first time we really get to see her just let go and kick ass. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, she's awesome. Like I mentioned before, I really like the fact that we don't really get, you know, we get snippets of it in the other films, but this is her spy. She's a super spy. This is her infiltrating a known organization. We're not aware of it, of course, in the beginning of the film, if you don't know what's going on. And she's literally infiltrating Tony Stark's organization and kind of... And she has all of these skills, and she's amazing at all these different things, and you're like, what's going on? And then you see this whole other side of her, and it's super badass, and it's just awesome. It's awesome all around. There's nothing bad about her appearance in this film.
I like how she so effectively manipulates Tony.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty easy when you look like she does.
When you look like her, yeah.
Tony doesn't think about a lot of things, honestly, especially when it comes to women.
He's kind of a
misogynist in that
way. Almost perfect, too, because like it's a great matchup of like, I love their first interaction. Well, when he sees her for the first time and he's like, oh, who's that? I want one of those. And it's like, and he doesn't realize that this woman could kick your ass three ways to Sunday, Tony. Like, you can't. It's not how it works, bud. Sorry.
I just like that his womanizing and the way he talks about and to women backfires on him so completely when it comes to Black Widow. Because I really needed that comeuppance to happen. Not gonna lie. Especially since one of the other female characters we see that comes back from Iron Man 1 is the Vanity Fair reporter, and he's so rude to her and so dismissive. And I'm so glad that Black Widow got to be like, you're a jerk. Make him look silly. Because that needs to happen more often.
I do think that he was mostly rude to her because of her association with someone I'm sure we're about to talk about, with Hammer. But I'm justifying it. But yeah, he is actually kind of a dick a lot of the times to these kinds of people.
To women specifically.
Women, to women, yes, to yes, women.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm with you, Daniel, though. I think that scene plays out on just on multiple levels because it's more about Sam Rockwell's Justin Hammer than it is her, but also making, like, snidely commenting on, oh, she's just after this story with him now the same way she was with me, and implying she's whorish. And
it's really, really...
Yeah.
Rude. It's so rude.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing, too, is the fact that he is using her as... Both of them are using her as, like, a trophy in their personal, like, competition. The whole thing is gross. So, yay, Black Widow.
But Pepper even joins in, too.
I know, and I don't like that either.
Yeah,
how dismissive is she... And one of the reasons why that bothers me is, like, you have a limited amount of women. It'd be nice if we didn't have one of the other women cutting each other. Anyways, the whole idea of female competition for men is all over this movie because you also have some jealousy going on between and competition going on between Nat and Pepper. So it's just, bah. It's a theme I see repeated throughout this movie. And actually, to be honest... Throughout Iron Man, he has a tendency, because of the kind of character he has a tendency to kind of personify that hyper-masculinity when it comes to women especially. I don't know how Pepper puts up with it, to be honest.
Well, sadly, Pepper is in love with Tony Stark.
Poor Pepper.
And, love covers a multitude of sins, they say. So, and with Tony, it's a multitude. But no, Sam Rockwell, you know, he can do just about anything, and he does in Justin Hammer. And he's aptly named because he hams up every single scene he is in so much that if he just inched it a little bit, and I'm sure some people might think this, but it could be too much for some people, but he is the perfect, you know, corporate D-bag who only cares about money completely, like, and a good mirror in a way of showing us what Tony used to be like completely. I mean, I feel like this was just Tony 2-3 years ago, you know, and, you know, Tony's has been reformed in some ways about this idea, like his company, we're not going to make weapons anymore until we can control where they're going, that kind of stuff. I mean, like, Hammer is exactly who Tony used to be. And I that's an interesting mirror to have, and Sam Rockwell kind of play him with even more cavalier attitude towards death and destruction, which I didn't think was possible, than Tony being like, you know, that's how Dad did it. That's how America does it. And it's worked pretty well ever since. You know, I mean, you didn't think it could get any more bravado. Sam Rockwell brings it up to like a 25.
Yeah, but the thing that's so awesome about Sam Rockwell is he plays it hammy, but he plays it as an aspect of the who Justin Hammer is. So, like, you get the sense that Justin Hammer is hammy. You know, like, he, that's who he is as, like, a character. So it becomes less about the acting and more about a character choice. And it's really hard to do that. It's really hard to go over the top and still keep it within the realm of believability for a character. I totally believe that there are men like this. Okay, like, there are definitely men like this. And I just, he's so enjoyable to watch, like, just completely throughout the whole movie. Basically every time he's there, especially when he's interacting with Mickey Rourke, it's delightful. I mean, just like, you want a bird. Okay. And, yeah, he gets to dance. I always want Sam Rockwell to be dancing, always, throughout every movie he's in.
You know, it's surprising to me that the hamminess is what stuck out in your mind, Matthew, because there's one or two other characters, possibly two, definitely at least one, who kind of also played up in this movie, and I'm sure we'll get to them as well. And also the fact that, of course, there are a lot of similarities, but when I watch this film, I'm not thinking of the Justin Hammer character as Tony Stark. And I see the parallel, like the Tony Stark 3 years or like the pre-Iron Man 1 Tony Stark. And I get that, but I'm actually thinking of the differences between, like, this is a Tony Stark totally devoid of morality, totally devoid of charm, totally devoid of any sort of redeeming quality at all. And I actually only see the differences when I see, like, this is a man who is almost good enough, who's almost smart enough, who's almost funny enough or charming enough to be interesting, but he's just not there. And he's like a hollow Tony Stark. You know those, like, hollow Easter bunnies? You know, you bite into those chocolates and you're like, there's nothing inside, no! That's kind of what he is. He's that version of Tony Stark.
That's such a perfect metaphor for him. I love it. No, he's Tony Stark if Tony Stark were incompetent.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's like when he, and Daniel and I were actually talking about this, when he gets up on stage and is trying to hype everybody up, and the crowd's like, and then Tony just shows up, and they're on their, they're like, yeah, Tony Stark. And he literally does nothing but, like, land on stage. It's so great.
But, you know, the last time, to give it to Tony, the last time that he was on stage, he also had Iron Man cheerleaders. So I'm just saying, you know, you bring cheerleaders to something, people cheer more.
Except for he didn't bring it the second time. He literally just comes in and stands on the stage. And Justin Hammer has spent the last, like, 5 minutes doing, like, this big hypey speech and trying to get everybody riled up, and they're like, nah.
There's, like, three people clapping in the audience.
He's Tony Stark without any charisma or competency. I love it.
I do think, though, that it's interesting because when you do look at Hammer, I at least see the Tony from earlier, and I can see how much Tony has grown. You know, we were talking about character growth and development for Tony, And by seeing Hammer, you get an idea of just how different Tony is from when, you know, even the beginning of Iron Man, the first one. So I think Sam Rockwell plays that character in such a douche with a suit way that you really do feel the difference of who Tony is. And yes, he's still struggling with those demons. I mean, this story was meant to kind of mirror in the comics his alcoholism storyline, which is so big in the comic series. They weren't going to go there with alcoholism being, you know, this Marvel thing, and that's a little bit too dark for what they were going to do. This is even before they were owned by Disney, but this is meant to mirror that, and I think it does a good job of just showing us where Tony's come from and where he is now, and he is a different guy. Even if they haven't completely so much done the best job in the films of making that really come to fruition. Well, Mickey Rourke had come off a huge hit with The Wrestler, and he could do no wrong at this point in his career, and so they brought him in as the villain in Vanko. And I do have to say, I feel sorry for Mickey Rourke because he has absolutely nothing to do in this film other than to pretend to speak Russian badly and kind of beat up on Tony a little bit and then, you know, get taken out. That's it. I mean, like, he just really doesn't have a meaty role. And this is where I feel like the whole legacy of the fathers and sons and stuff would have helped if you had developed some things more, maybe given some more flashbacks or something to Tony, his father, Howard, and Anton Vanko, and all that kind of stuff, built that stuff up more so that this villain had more to do, because he just, you know, I don't know, revenge plots are kind of boring. And it's the Marvel problem, and he's not as interesting as a villain as Obadiah Stane was, for sure, in the first film. He just feels like a lesser version of that, honestly.
And the final climactic battle is very similar as well.
And very quick. Like, they take him out, and they've already choreographed how they're going to take him out earlier in the film, so it's like, the whole thing is not a surprise. It's just like, oh no, you're just going to do the thing where you put your hands out. It's terrible. It's really badly done.
It's also an interesting problem, and I'm not saying that Iron Man 2 has this great vision, but you know, when we watch comic book movies, we expect a formula, right? There is this ultimate bad guy at the end. There, you know, maybe it's a revenge plot, maybe whatever, it's whatever. He does what he does in this film, and I actually agree that there should be more of it, but it doesn't necessarily, he doesn't have to be this scheming, ultimate plotting villain that has this super convenient goal for the climax of the film that he wants to come in and do all of this thing. He wants to take Tony down a notch, which he does two or three times in the film, and that's it. Like, it doesn't have to be, again, I'm actually just being apologetic for the film. Honestly, I do agree. I do agree that he is kind of a weak villain, but I don't necessarily, you know, it is what it is. I actually like Mickey Rourke in the role. I think he does a really good job, only because, and I mentioned it before, I think he hams it up even more than Sam Rockwell does. I love his Russian accent and the tattoos, and I want my board. I want my board. I love it. Like, that is my favorite part of the entire movie, is his obsession with his bird. It's fantastic. You know, it doesn't, but it's fine. It's fine. It's not perfect. It's not even great, but it is, but it's enjoyable. To me, it's entertaining.
Okay, so you remember when the three of us got together and talked about the crap fest that was Fantastic Four?
Yes.
Okay, so
I do. I can't scrub that from my brain.
So the end of Fantastic Four is like what this, they finish their final battle in like 10 minutes, and that revenge plot really goes nowhere. So at least we can agree that although maybe structurally it doesn't work in Iron Man 2, at least you have some fun watching it, and there are some fun moments while you're doing it. Like, I do dig Mickey Rourke with those giant, like, electric whip things. Like, that's just silly enough to make me, like, enjoy watching it. And it's kind of visually interesting, which, considering that whole ass battle is basically robots punching each other, I will take anything visually interesting at that point. So it could be worse, Matthew. It could be worse. You could have to watch last 15 minutes of Fantastic Four again. Count your blessings.
Or any 2 minutes of that film.
That's true, too.
It is so true, and you're right. But I don't want to have to compare it to something so bad and be like, oh, it's better. Because everything is better than Fantastic Four.
I'm just pointing out that, and this is something that I really realized rewatching it, is as much as overall I think the movie doesn't work, I do laugh out loud at moments, and I do have fun watching huge sections of it. It just doesn't come together in a story-like manner that I like. So, like, overall, I don't particularly like this movie, but I can watch it again.
And that is to me, is the perfect, and we'll get to, I guess, you know, whatever when we get to ratings, but it's like, even and even Matthew, you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast when you rewatched Incredible Hulk, which to me is actually the weakest of all Marvel films, wasn't so bad. So even the weakest Marvel film, even the one that has the most problems, all these issues, you know what? You're probably going to have at least a half good time watching the film.
I'll say this. I think that the problem to me is, and this is a problem with, I would say, a majority of the Marvel films, is they don't have a villain worthy of their heroes for the most part. Their villains are just kind of weak. And, you know, really good, and the saying goes that a hero is only as good as their villain, and that is something that, you know, on a whole, superhero films, I don't think of any villains from Marvel in my head, from comics or anything. I'm always thinking of DC villains because they're always better. They're always more iconic, and they're always more well done, at least for most of the time in their films.
Come on, man. You didn't dig Lee Pace covered in purple makeup?
Oh, he's awful.
Calling
he
a
is
giant
awful.
Hammer around?
Wait,
awful,
wait a minute.
Awful, awful. Hold on. We can't go down this road. I want to, but we cannot. We just can't.
They had a dance battle.
We will talk
battle.
About all
Come
the Marvel
on.
Films,
that
I promise.
That is good
and we
behavior.
And argue
right
about them all. But I just, in general, I think if you look at them, you know, and let's just look at the three that we've had in the series so far. We had Iron Man. What would I say? Not bad. You know, it's a decent plot. Although his revenge plot against Tony is very similar to the revenge plot we get in the second film. That's what I'm saying. It's just a lesser version of the second one. And again, it falls into that sequel trap. And then Incredible Hulk, I think, actually has it's an okay villain, but again, you know, it becomes the Abomination thing, and as Mike and I talked about, he's actually more interesting when he's not Abomination. He's just kind of really a super soldier fighting Hulk. I don't know.
I forgot about him. When you were like the villain of Incredible Hulk, I was like, oh, crap, who is that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I do want to, let's touch on quickly, let's make it quick, but I do think, Andy, you mentioned something that is really important earlier, and it is one of the themes of the movie, the politics of safety, and you know, this whole idea of who's going to keep us safe, and how we're going to be kept safe, and how that becomes a political thing, even though it shouldn't be a political thing, because it's about safety. It's you know, like, why are we turning it into a massive political issue, and it's happening in our real world? And then, you know, in this movie too, you add this whole private sector versus the government thing and who's more inventive and what they're doing. So there are some really interesting things they could have talked about in this movie if we just had a little bit more time to deal with important stuff and not just, like, you know,
I've
things that aren't
bird.
So important. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, I just, man, do I love that scene.
I know, it's such a great scene, but it just doesn't work overall. It's
no,
like
no, no,
you
no.
spend all this time talking about a bird.
No. No. I'm not even talking about that. I do love that scene. but I'm talking about the Senate scene. That is my favorite scene of the entire film. It really is. And for a lot of reasons, for the fact that it is Tony Stark at his Tony Starkest, which is great, right? Who's not afraid to, you know, be himself in the face of this giant, in the face of the government, we'll say, anyways. And then I actually think that, and we talked a little bit about Senator Stern being Hail Hydra. Hail Hydra. but then, of course, you know, this scene, maybe not specifically, but I imagine the themes of it will definitely be felt in Civil War as well.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about that when I was rewatching it, because I was like, wow, how does this scene where Tony is so resistant to the idea of the government having power over him, how does that fit in with the stance he takes in Civil War? It's kind of interesting.
Tony's a flip-flopper. I think we can all admit it. Tony's a flip-flopper. We figured it out here.
I wish
that's
you guys could see
politics.
Daniel's face right now.
So, I agree with you, Daniel. When I was watching that scene again as well, it is my favorite because it's the one that reminds me the most of a lighter version of what they end up going for in Winter Soldier. But it's touching on those really important issues that movie is able to bring to the forefront. And then, of course, they just kind of brush them aside for the rest of the film here. But that is a great scene, and it brings home so many interesting questions. I mean, you know, to me, it was this whole idea, too. Like, do we hand the government more power to do things with power they really haven't earned from the private sector?
And can we trust them
with it? Or do we just let the... Yeah, exactly. Or do we just let the private sector do it? You know, like, which one's really better? Do we want to hand over more power to the government for all sorts of things out there in the world when they can't even deliver the mail well? I mean, come on. You know, and honestly, I can speak from experience. You know, my wife was in the military. She's still in the National Guard. And there's so much bureaucracy involved in just the military in general. I mean, that's one of their main focuses, is to keep us safe with military. And they have a hard time doing that, too. So it's like, it's a great scene because it's bringing up all these questions. I just wish we had gotten the opportunity to deal with it more, because this is where the movie was saying something good, and then it doesn't go anywhere. And I'm like, come on. And that's why I like Captain America best. Anyway. All right. I think we're time for ratings, because we could literally just keep going around the horn about all the things in this movie and how they connect with other things from the MCU, but I don't think that's fair to those other movies. We should talk about those on their own terms. So, and we're definitely going to do that. We're going to be talking about Captain America. We'll be talking about Winter Soldier and, of course, Civil War as it comes out. And then after, I think we're going to be actually getting to, we're going to be talking about Thor before,
are you going
to
recuse
America's
yourself because you hate it so much?
No, I'm going to watch it again. I'm going to give it another shot. I'm going to see how it goes. But, so yeah, we're trying to get through some Marvel movies here for you guys. And it's been fun to kind of have a reason to do it, because we're working towards Civil War. We won't get to everything. We won't end up getting to cover all of the stuff before Civil War, like Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy, Thor 2, and that kind of stuff. So forgive us, we just don't have the time to do that. But we'll try to do as much as we can. And so all that aside, looking at Iron Man 2 again for you guys, how do you rate this one?
I actually like it more now. I don't know if it's Daniel's
fault. I win!
Well, stop.
I win!
But I actually like it more after this podcast, because it really did remind me of how funny parts of it are. I would have given it 2 out of 5 stars before, and now I'll give it 3. It's watchable. It's incoherent, but it's watchable. The acting is good. There are a lot of great moments. It sets up a lot of cool stuff to come. I get to see Black Widow kicking a lot of ass. So overall, I like it better than I used to.
All right, Daniel, what do you think?
5 stars. Go, Iron Man.
No. Look, I'm reasonable. I'm reasonable.
4.5.
4.75.
Yeah. No. I'm in the same place. It is by far the weakest of any film to feature Tony Stark. I'll say that. Actually, that's not true, because Incredible Hulk had Tony Stark in it. But anyways, I'm going to give it 3.2. I would say 3 out of 5 as well, because, I mentioned it before. I actually do think all Marvel films are at least decent films. They're worth watching. And especially they're worth watching for the context of the greater whole. And certainly this film is, because, like we already mentioned, maybe it has a little bit more of the whole than it needs and less of itself. But it's good. There's a lot of good stuff to take out of it. And, there are some issues. But we get to see what I think is the start of Civil War, which is when Iron Man uses Captain America's shield basically as a prop. He uses it to hold a piece of tubing up. And that's kind of what really sets Captain Rogers off. So,
Just wait till we get to Cap Civil War, and Cap is using that shield to beat the crap out of Tony. So, yeah. Anyway, this film on my list of the MCU films is number 10, which makes it the third worst Marvel film for me. Actually, The Incredible Hulk jumped up quite a few spots for me. In its rewatch, it held up better. Unfortunately for me, Iron Man 2 still has all the same problems I thought it did when I rewatched it. I just confirmed that. Now, I will say, Robert Downey Jr. makes this enjoyable because he is Robert Downey Jr. and he's being Iron Man, and I find that enjoyable. I like the character, actually, and so it works better for me than either of the Thor films do, at least until my rewatch. We'll see if that changes. But, it's a 3-star movie for me out of 5. It's barely 3 stars because it really does suffer as an actual movie. Andy, you said it. There's some kind of incoherence, and it's just a frustrating, malaise-ish mess of a film. You're just slogging through it a lot of times, and scenes are enjoyable, but they're just not connecting fully in the way that you would hope to tell the best story for the main character. I mean, the film is called Iron Man 2. We want to see Iron Man grow and mature and change and all those things, but that gets pushed to the side here for a lot of other stuff. And I don't, as we argued a lot about, I don't know how you make this film better other than the fact that we talked about you have to cut something out, but what you cut out and how you cut it out, this film, I feel like it needed a complete rewrite and a rescript and everything. It needed probably 6 more months of pre-production before they went into filming, and I guess they just didn't have it, because this, Favreau with Iron Man just knocked it out of the park. This is one like Age of Ultron where there's too much, and there is too much of a good thing for sure when you just don't have that laser focus. But I really am. I'm so glad to be talking about these films and getting a chance to go back and watch them and see if my mind has changed, especially these earlier films here. It's 5-6 years ago now. So, seeing if my age, which I've gotten older, makes a difference too in how I look at films and stories. And, for Incredible Hulk, that changed. I'm kind of hoping for myself that could actually happen with Thor, maybe. So, crossing my fingers. I'm not hoping out a lot of hope, but because that symbol doesn't mean hope, the hammer. But we'll see what happens. I'm really glad that we got a chance to talk about this. I'm really thankful for our associate producers here through Patreon, Ken Tripp and Davis Grayson. They make sure that we get to bring the 602 Club to you each and every week. Now, 602 Club is part of the Trek FM network, as we talked about, and that network is a listener-supported network. And what that means is, a lot like PBS, we need your help to make sure that the content keeps coming to you. As we are at Trek FM, we are dedicated mostly to Star Trek, and we are celebrating the 50th anniversary in a huge way. We've got new shows that have hit the air this year, so we're looking through the entire run of Star Trek. All 700-some-odd hours of Star Trek we'll be covering on the network for you. Shows dedicated to each parts of Star Trek, the minutia of Star Trek. We've even got a new show on the animated series. I mean, it's fantastic. So help us out and make sure that it all keeps coming to you through patreon.com. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We've got some special perks for you, so check all that out. We'd love to have you part of the team. Now, Daniel, Andy, I'm so glad we got the Marvel Posse back. It meant we had some great fights between you two. I love it that we have our own Civil War every time you're on. And Andy, let everybody know where they can find you, of course, online, and about the podcast you do here on the network.
Yeah, the easiest way to follow me is on Twitter at First Time Trek. I'm live tweeting my way through Star Trek. And then also on the network, I am one of the hosts of Women at Warp.
Awesome. And Daniel, where are you online? And of course, I mean, if you listened to the show last week, you know you can find Daniel. But make sure that you remind everyone, too, about the podcast, the little podcast you have on the network.
Tiny. Minuscule.
I mean, you're only on the Hilton in space.
Well, you know, well, yeah. It's not that big. There's only 1,000 or so people.
We only look like a Hilton from the 80s. I mean, come on, guys.
Exactly. Yeah, of course, you can find me every week with my wonderful co-hosts, Darren and Philip, talking TNG all the time here on Trek FM on Earl Grey. And then personally, if you want to get a hold of me, Twitter's the best way. My handle there is 1UpDan. That's the number one, not the word.
Awesome, guys. Well, I really appreciate y'all being here. Everybody can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing The Orb with Christopher Jones, where we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine. I'm on Literary Treks with Dan, where we're talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek, which is so much fun. We interviewed the authors as well about their latest books, which it's been a blast. It's been a great year so far, so make sure you check us out. I'm on a new podcast with my friend John Mills, where we talk about Star Wars, just Star Wars. We pick a great new topic each week. It's called Aggressive Negotiations. We actually have just joined the Nerd Party, so check it out at thenerdparty.com. And we're also on Twitter at The Jedi Masters. And goodness, please make sure you check out all those things. And I really just want to say thank you so much for joining us tonight. And y'all come back now, you hear?
Harder.